30. I am thinking of an abstraction that was noted by Aristotle, and that was taken by Hegel, for the basis of his philosophy. That wherever there is a conflict of extremes, there is an outcome that is not absolute victory on either side, but is a compromise, or what Hegel called the union of complementaries. Our own controversy is an opposition of extremes. That this earth moves swiftly. That this earth is stationary. In terms of controversies and their outcomes, I cannot think that either of these sides can be altogether right, or will absolutely defeat the other, when comes some way of finding out, and settling this issue. The idea of stationariness came first. Then, as a sheer, mechanical reaction, inasmuch as Copernicus had not one datum that a conventionalist of today would accept as meaning anything, came the idea of a swiftly moving earth. An intermediate view will probably appear and prevail. My own notion of equilibrium between these extremes, backed up with our chapters of data, is that, within a revolving, starry shell that, relatively to the extravagances of the astronomical extremists, is not far away, this roundish earth is almost central, but is not absolutely stationary, having various slight movements. Perhaps it does rotate, but within a period of a year. Like everybody else, I have my own notions upon what constitutes reasonableness, and this is my idea of a compromise. The primary view had for its support the highest mathematical authoritativeness of its era. Now, so has the secondary view. Mathematics has been as subservient to one view as the other. Mostly our data have been suggestive, or correlative, but it may be that there are visual indications of a concave land in the sky, or of a substantial shell around this earth. There are dark places in the sky, and some of them have the look of land. They are called dark nebulae. Some astronomers have speculated upon them, as glimpses of a limiting outline of a system as a whole. See back to Dalmage, quoted upon this subject. My own notion is of a limiting, outlining substance that I call a shell. Dark nebulae have the look of bare, or starless, patches of a shell. Some of them may be formations that are projections from a shell. They hang like superstalactites in a vast and globular cave. At least one of these appearances has the look of a mountain peak. In several books by astronomers, plates of this object have appeared. See Duncan's Astronomy. It is known as the Horsehead Nebula. It stands out, as a vast, sullen refusal to mix into a frenzy of phosphorescent confetti. It is a solid-looking gloom, such as, some election night, the Woolworth Building would be, if Republican, and all the rest of Broadway hysterical with a Democratic celebration. Over its summit comes light, like the fringe of dawn topping a mountain. Something is shining behind this formation, but penetrates no more than it would shine through a mountain. It may be that relatively there are few stars that hosts of tiny lights in the sky are reflections, upon irregularities of the shell land, from large stars. Among expressions that I have not developed is one that is suggested by a circumstance that astronomers consider strange. This is that some variable stars have a period of about a year. Just what variations of stars that are said to be trillions of miles away could have to do with a period upon this ultra-remote Earth cannot be conceived of in orthodox terms. The suggestion is that these lights, with variations corresponding with advances and recessions of the Sun, moving spirally around this almost stationary Earth, are reflections of sunlight from points of land, or from lakes in extinct, or dormant craters. It may be that many variations of light that have been attributed to companions are tidal phenomena in celestial lakes that shine as reflections from the Sun, or from other stars, which may be lakes of molten lava. There is a formation in the constellation Cygnus that has often been noted. It is faintly luminescent, but this light, according to Professor Hubble, is a reflection from the star Deneb. It is shaped like North America, and it is known as the America Nebula. Out from its Gulf of Mexico are islands of light. One of these may be a San Salvador someday. Like Alaska to birds from the north, the Horsehead Nebula stands out from its background, like something to fly to. Star after star after star has blazed a story, sometimes publishing tragedy on Earth, illustrated with spectacles in the heavens. But, when transcribed into human language, these communications are depopularized with determinations and pronouncements. So our tribes have left these narratives of fires and smokes and catastrophes to the wise men, who have made Titanic tales unintelligible with their little technical jargons. The professionals will not unprofessionalize, they will not give up their system. Where have the wise men ever done so among the Eskimos, or the Hairy Ainus, the Zulus, or the Kaffirs? Whatever we are, they are acting to keep us whatever we are, as the Zulus are kept whatever they are. We are beguiled by snoozers, who have been beaten time after time by schoolboys. There's a fire in the sky, and ashes and smoke and dust reach this earth, as sometimes after an eruption of Vesuvius, discharges reach Paris. There may be volcanoes in a land of the sky, so close to this earth that, if intervening space be not airless and most intensely cold, an expedition could sail away in a dash to the stars. That would be a bold and magnificent trifle. 31. Besides the new star, which was an object so conspicuous that it was discovered widely, except by astronomers, there was another astronomical occurrence in the month of June, 1918, an eclipse of the sun. It was observed in Oregon. We can't expect such a checkup as when Coogan's Bluff and the Consolidated Gas Company get into astronomy, but Oregonians set their alarm clocks, and looked up at the sky. See Mitchell's Eclipses of the Sun, p. 67. The astronomers admitted an error of 14 seconds in their prediction. Measurements of ordinary refinement are in hair breadths, but a hair is coarse material to the ethereal astronomers, who use filaments spun by spiders. And just where do the astronomers get their cobwebs? This book of ours is full of mysteries, but here is something that is not one of them. My own opinion is that an error of only 14 seconds is a very creditable approximation. But it is a huge and grotesque blunder, when compared with the fairy-like refinements that the astronomers dream are theirs, in matters that cannot be so easily checked up. To readers who are not clear upon this point, I repeat that predictions of eclipses cannot be cited in support of conventionality against our own expressions, because, whether upon the basis that this earth moves, or is stationary, eclipses can be predicted and lo, come to pass. But lo, if, looking on, there be an intelligent representative of the Consolidated Gas Company, or an Oregonian with an alarm clock, predictions aren't just exactly what they should be. We have divided astronomers into professionals and amateurs, but, wherever there are differences, there is somewhere the merging point that demonstrates continuity. W.F. Denning represents the amateur-professional merging point. He has never had a job, though it does not look to me that job is the right word in an observatory, but he has written a great deal upon astronomical matters. He is an accountant, in the city of Bristol, England. Has nothing to do with observatories, but has a celebrated backyard. Upon the night of August 20, 1920, Denning sat in his backyard, and, in surroundings that were touched up most unacademically by cats on the fences, though observatory-like enough, with snores from back windows, he discovered Nova Cygni III. This is another instance of a new star appearing close to where there had been preceding new stars, as if all were eruptions in one region of especially active volcanic land. There were earthquakes in this period. In the United States, there were the sudden deluges that are called cloudbursts. Upon the night of August 28, a seismic wave drowned 200 persons, on the island of Sagalien, off the east coast of Siberia. For four nights, astronomers of the so-called observatories had been photographing this star. Students of phenomena of somnambulism will be interested in our data. When Denning woke up the astronomers, they looked at what they had been unconsciously doing, and learned that from the 16th of the month, this star had risen from 7th to about 3rd magnitude. A star of 3rd magnitude is a conspicuous star. In the whole sky there are, photographic magnitudes, only 3 of this size. At any one time not more than 40 of them are visible. The limit of visibility, without a telescope, is somewhere between the 6th and 7th magnitudes. So it is said. According to our data, the limit of seeing depends upon who's looking. I wonder what ironic fellow first called these snug, little centers of inattention observatories. He had a wit of his own, whoever he was. Discovery of the new star, if not a comet, of August 7, 1921, has been attributed to a professional wiseman, Director Campbell, of Lick Dormitory. But it was a brilliant and conspicuous appearance. Most of the new stars that professionals have discovered, or have had discovered for them, by the not very eagle-eyed females of Harvard, have been small points on photographic plates. English Mechanic, 114-211 records of observations by four amateurs, before the time of Director Campbell's discovery. One of these observations was 24 hours earlier. Some time ago, I read an astronomer's complaint against heavy traffic near an observatory. Though now I have different ideas as to an astronomer's dislike for disturbance, night times, I was not so experienced then, and innocently supposed that he meant that delicate instruments were jarred.